All right, welcome back to Talking Baseball alongside Bill Lasky and Marty Lurie. My name is Carey Crowley, and it's my pleasure to welcome in our next guest, June Lee. He covers Major League Baseball for ESPN, and we first met in the dugout at Fenway Park 2 years ago when Mike Yastrzemski had the fantastic game in front of his grandfather, Carl. June, how are you today?
Good, man. How are you doing?
Doing very well. Looking forward to this conversation. And I guess since we met at Fenway Park, the place I want to start is with the Red Sox and what they've done this season. Everyone in San Francisco has been so surprised by the Giants' success, and the Red Sox have kind of mirrored that on the East Coast. And they go out at the trade deadline, get Kyle Schwarber. Are the chances to win the American League East still as legitimate now that the Yankees and Rays have made big pushes at the deadline?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this team has been built around depth. I think it's just kind of similar to what Farhan has done out in San Francisco. Chaim Bloom obviously came in for the Tampa Bay Rays organization. I think he's kind of taken a similar roster-building approach to just have a lot of very competent players across the field up and down the roster. And obviously the Yankees made a couple of big moves there at the deadline with Anthony Rizzo and Joey Gallo, and the Rays obviously got Nelson Cruz as well. But the Red Sox have been the most consistent team in the division throughout the course of the season. So they've needed a bat. They're going to try out Kyle Schwarber at first base. First base has kind of been their biggest hole from an offensive standpoint. Bobby Dalbec, the young first baseman, has kind of been a disappointment there from an offensive standpoint. And so they're going to try Schwarber at first base. He hasn't played first base since he was at the Cape Cod League back in college. And so that will be an interesting experiment. There was a portion of Red Sox fans who thought that they should have been a little more aggressive at the deadline in terms of trying to get some starting pitching and some more established relief pitching as well. The starting pitching has kind of been a little bit all over the place. Chris Sale is going to be coming back. And I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on him to perform well as we move forward into the season. Nathan Eovaldi has been the team's best pitcher this year. And then throughout the rest of the rotation, Martin Perez, Garrett Richards, and Nick Pivetta have kind of been a little bit up and down. And Eduardo Rodriguez has had kind of a bad season as well. And so there was definitely a contingent of Red Sox fans who wanted the team to go out and get some more starting pitching. But Chaim Bloom is trying to balance the thread in terms of competing now and also in the future and kind of trying to create as much sustainable success as possible moving forward.
Well, it's a fascinating race in the AL East. And you mentioned sustainable success. That's the buzzword in San Francisco with Farhan Zaidi and Scott Harris. We've heard it so many times. And a lot of it has to do with the model that the Rays have created down in Tampa Bay, just plugging in players where it always seems to work. They go out, they get Nelson Cruz at the deadline and kind of shaping up for their October push. The Yankees go out and get Anthony Rizzo and Joey Gallo, two big left-handed bats for that lineup. Any surprise that Brian Cashman kind of pushed in all the chips here, even though he didn't deal, you know, one of his top two or three prospects? He did go out and give up a lot of depth from that farm system to make a run where the Yankees aren't necessarily even in position to make the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of those situations where the Yankees are always expected to be in the postseason. They have really, really, really fallen short of expectations. I think coming into the year, the Dodgers and the Yankees were both expected to be the class of baseball in terms of those rosters on paper, especially for the Yankees. That hasn't happened. They've really been struggling offensively throughout the course of the entire year. They've had some injuries with Corey Kluber in the rotation. And, you know, I think Brian Cashman kind of found the ideal balance for his situation in trying to improve that offense by getting guys like Gallo and Rizzo while not giving up prospects. But I mean, that team has done a really good job over the course of the last, you know, 5 years or so, building up more of a sustainable foundation. And because of the team's lack of success this year, having, you know, Gerrit Cole in his prime on such an expensive deal, I think they feel a sense of urgency to have to try to win now as soon as possible. And so that's what Brian Cashman has done. They're competing at this point probably for a one-game wild card playoff. So we'll see how this shapes up. But it's definitely a bit of a risky move.
9 All-Stars on the move from the 2021 All-Star clubs at this year's deadline. 2 of them going from Washington, D.C. down to Los Angeles, and Max Scherzer and Trey Turner in what was probably the biggest blockbuster deal at the trade deadline we've had in recent memory. June, your impressions of that deal and the guys going back from the Dodgers, Kybert Ruiz, Josiah Gray to Washington, D.C., just what you thought of the Dodgers kind of pushing in their chips here with 3 games back of the Giants in the National League West?
Yeah, I joked on Twitter that like Juan Soto is like that Pablo Escobar gif where he's just like sitting by himself on the swing right now in D.C. in that Nationals clubhouse. I mean, it makes sense what the Dodgers are doing. I mean, coming into the year, people expected them, at least I expect them to be potentially one of the best regular season teams ever, just given the talent on that roster. Obviously, the Giants have looked so good so far this year, and I think the Dodgers going after Scherzer and Trey Turner kind of was the spark that set off the explosion that was this year's trade deadline, with so many trades, so many moves, and so many teams out west trying to get better. I think it was part of the push that got San Francisco to really go in on and try to get Chris Bryant as well. And so I'm really, really excited to see how that NL West race shapes up, because between San Diego, San Francisco kind of being that upstart underdog, and the Dodgers being this juggernaut on paper, it's going to be really, really fun to watch down the stretch.
Chatting here with June Lee of ESPN. You can read him on Major League Baseball on ESPN.com. You can see him on Around the Horn and other ESPN properties. He does a tremendous job there. June, you mentioned Chris Bryant to San Francisco. He's introduced at Oracle Park on Sunday morning. People think, myself included, that he is really the perfect fit for this Giants lineup with his ability to move all over the diamond, the big right-handed bat. Of the three Chicago Cubs players traded at the deadline, the three really big ones from the position player side, and Javi Baez, Anthony Rizzo, and Chris Bryant, is Bryant the best of that trio?
Yeah, I would say, and Bryant probably has the biggest potential to make the most impact because of that versatility, and just given his history as peak being one of the best hitters in baseball. I think when you look at the way that teams across baseball are trying to build out the sustainable success type of roster, when you look at how the Tampa Bay Rays and now the Los Angeles Dodgers with Andrew Friedman have kind of set the standard over the course of the last decade or so, versatility is really at the core of that. I think that's part of the foundation of what Chaim Bloom tried to do in Boston by going out and signing guys like Kike Hernandez and Marwin Gonzalez, and getting Kyle Schwarber, who's obviously played the outfield and has played catcher in the past and is now trying to be a first baseman. That's a guy you can move around and you can kind of put in different spots and fit in different places. And I think Bryan's the kind of guy who, as an potentially elite offensive talent, is now able to play the outfield, is able to play third base, is able to kind of move around. It gives a lot of flexibility to these managers to kind of have as many permutations as possible depending on the matchup. And I think that's really how this like sustainable success, foundational depth roster building strategy has kind of built up over the course of the last 5 years or so across baseball.
A really exciting trade deadline for a number of different fan bases. Of course, the buyers in San Francisco, LA, New York, Boston, but also an exciting deadline for some of the teams that were sellers, and that the Cubs and the Nationals, they get back big prospect hauls at a point in time when a rebuild or a reset is kind of necessary for those teams. I want to ask you about the teams that didn't necessarily have a good deadline. Let's start with the Seattle Mariners and Jerry DePoto potentially losing that clubhouse in the trade of Kendall Graveman. We saw him in San Francisco this week, June. This guy's an electric reliever, really popular in the clubhouse. And Jerry DePoto said, just wait, we're going to make more moves after he was traded to the Astros. And they get left-handed pitcher Tyler Anderson, but that was about it. And he said, we tried. I mean, that just seems unacceptable.
Yeah, I think going out and making that move and kind of ticking off your entire clubhouse and saying, wait, 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 more's going to happen than like, you know, kind of the air getting let out of the balloon there. It's a massive disappointment just given the lack of playoff success Seattle has had, and the fact that they are in the middle of that race in the AL West right now. It is pretty unacceptable. I think it's one of those situations where you have a numbers oriented general manager who, who looks at the numbers on papers and thinks there's a way to efficiently upgrade the roster and potentially had a couple of trades in mind, but did not necessarily think about how it would affect the human side of the clubhouse and the human side of baseball. Because like, as much as we love thinking about these athletes, I think the industry at large loves thinking about athletes as entertainers. They're people as well, and there's the chemistry dynamic to a lot of these teams. You've been in enough clubhouses to understand how much chemistry and a team getting along on the field and knowing how to pick each other up can affect the success of a team. It's one of those things where it really, really felt like a miscalculation and Jerry DePoto getting ahead of himself, especially when Graveman's been one of the best relievers in baseball and was such an important part to Seattle's success so far this year.
And remarkably, it's possible that the Mariners deadline wasn't even the most puzzling in Major League Baseball. The Colorado Rockies had the potential to move John Gray, had the potential to move Trevor Story, who seemingly desperately wanted to get out of Colorado, and yet they didn't. And Trevor Story pulls himself from the lineup after the trade deadline on Friday night in San Diego. I don't know what to make of Colorado. I thought by getting Jeff Bridich out of there and replacing him, at some point, at some level of that organization, things would start to turn, but the tide has not gotten there yet, June.
Yeah, I frankly just don't understand what Colorado was doing. It's like they went into the deadline perfectly set up to improve their roster for the long term and then just put on a pair of blindfolds and like walk straight into a wall and decide to like not do anything. Like, I just like, I can't rationally understand why they didn't do anything, especially when they had assets or players like Jonathan Gray and Daniel Bard and Trevor Story, who a lot of teams would have wanted at the deadline to build back up that farm system. And they just decided to stand pat. It just like, it really, really makes no sense. It's very hard to understand.
Hey, one more before we let you go here. You wrote a really important story for ESPN.com about Angels minor leaguers and the treatment of minor leaguers in general, the difficult living situations that they face. And I'd love for you to tell our audience a little bit about how that story came about and what kind of change you hope to see in the way that minor leaguers are treated, not just in the Angels organization, but around Major League and minor league baseball in general.
Yeah, so I talked to Kieran Lovegrove on the Record, who's this pitcher for the AA Rocket City Trash Pandas for the Angels organization. And he basically went on the Record about kind of the living conditions of what it's like for him and his teammates right now. And he was talking about how at the time of us speaking for the article, he was living in an apartment with I believe four other teammates and two of their girlfriends. So it was seven people stuffed into a three-bedroom apartment, two people sleeping in the living room, one person sleeping in the kitchen. And just generally the lack of good food that's given to these teams. A lot of players across the minor leagues are expected to consume 3,500 to 4,000 calories a day, and teams are only providing about 1,000 calories a day of food. And Lovegrove specifically pointed out the Angels organization because he'd been in the Cleveland's organization, been in Baltimore, he'd been with the Dodgers, and while treatment across the minor leagues is pretty bad across the board, and a lot of these guys get paid, I mean, most minor league players are paid below minimum wage, and the labor situation is pretty bad there. He pointed out the Angels and Artie Moreno is particularly bad in terms of how they're treating their players. I talked to this other minor leaguer as well who retired during the middle of the season. His name is Shane Kelso. He played for Low A, and he was talking about how just from playing minor league baseball, he was losing $400 a month just on rent. So he was making $1,600 a month, paying $2,000 a month on rent, and then another $600 on food and just like general life things that you need to, you know, live a life as a human being. So he was losing $1,000 a month playing minor league baseball. Said he would have gone bankrupt by the end of August had he not stopped playing minor league baseball. And I think this is just generally emblematic of a larger labor situation that's brewing in the minor leagues, where a lot of players are starting to get fed up about how they're treated, realizing that they're being paid completely under minimum wage as prices across the country are going up for normal cost of living. And so I think players in the minors are starting to feel as if they need to advocate for themselves and speak up. And it's going to be very interesting to see moving forward how that labor situation resolves itself, because, you know, it's not just on the minor leagues to speak up, but MLB consolidated the minor leagues last year, got rid of 40 plus teams under the guise of them having more control over how these players will be treated, potentially raising salaries, raising living conditions, raising the conditions of their training facilities. And from what I've heard from my reporting so far, that hasn't happened. And so I think there is a brewing situation happening there that we'll see how it resolves itself over the course of the coming months and years.
Well, really important story. I encourage everyone to check it out on ESPN.com. June Lee, thank you so much for joining us here on Talking Baseball. We greatly appreciate it.
Thanks, Carey. Appreciate you having me on, man.
All right, a lot more coming up next. Talking baseball, Marty, Carey, and Bill. You're listening to KMBR 104.5 680, the sports leader.